Okay, we're on page Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Aleph, page 360. Okay, so the Pasuk says, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Leimer, Hashem spoke to Moshe, and okay, Hashem said to Moshe Leimer, saying the following. Kaddishli kol bechor, sanctify for me every firstborn. Peter korechem b'vnei Yisrael, any of the firstborn to the womb of the Jewish people. Ba'adam of abahema, whether it's a person or an animal, lihu, it's mine. So basically Hashem is commanding Moshe Rabbeinu that because of the miracle that took place by the plague of Makas Bechiris, of the smiting the firstborn, so Hashem said that therefore the firstborn really belonged to me. In other words, Hashem exchanged it. And he said, really, this they belong to me. Now, the Torah though says the expression, Peterechem. What does Peterechem mean? It has to be the firstborn of the womb. Meaning it's not necessarily the firstborn father. Because a father, it's not the firstborn of the father, it's the firstborn of the mother. So for instance, in the olden times, when people were allowed to marry a few wives, and he married three wives, and each wife gave birth to a firstborn, each one of them was a bechor that needed to be redeemed. But it has nothing to do with the firstborn of the father. Because what happens if a man who never had children married a woman that had children from before? So even though their firstborn from the father is the firstborn for inheritance, because it's the firstborn to the father, but as far as the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen that we're going to be learning here about, so then it's not considered a bechor.
So, maybe it was like a miscarriage, the first pregnancy.
Well, we're going to get into that soon. But the question is that the Mefarshim ask, when Hashem killed the firstborn Egyptians, he killed every firstborn, the fathers, the mothers. So if Hashem killed the firstborns of everybody, why didn't Hashem say, all the firstborns are mine? You know, father, mother, just think he killed the firstborn. So they say basically one of the reasons is because this is definite and Hashem only wanted to make the first definite firstborns, the ones that are Pidyon HaBen. What does it mean? It's similar to the concept that's brought down in Svarim. When you make a mishaberach for somebody who's sick, you use the mother's name. So it says, why do you use the mother's name by mishaberach? So the reason is that you know for sure who the mother is. The father, sometimes you don't know who the father is. The mother, you know for sure who the mother is. The same thing it says, the firstborn mother to the mother, you know for sure it's a firstborn. You know exactly what's doing with the mother. The father, who knows? So that's the reason.
Remember?
Yeah.
Did Hashem kill the firstborn women too?
It says that even if there was no firstborn male, he killed the firstborn women also.
So
any firstborn Hashem killed.
So, but when you say Tehillim for somebody's
the mother's name.
Dead. Somebody's dead.
Say Tehillim for somebody who died?
Yeah, I mean, you want to bring his name so you can give him.
No, yeah, not for somebody who's sick, somebody who passed away, yeah.
You say the father's name or you say the mother's name?
There's a very interesting difference in customs between Chabad and everybody else. Mm-hmm. When you say Yisker, you know, Yizkor services. So normally, when people say the name of the deceased, by most Siddurim you look, it's the name of the father.
Yeah.
If you look in the Chabad Siddur, it says the mother.
Yeah.
Plaini ben plainis. Plainis bas plainis. Our custom is by Yizkor, use the mother's name, not the father's name. Similar to Mishaberach. And obviously, I mean, the logical reason behind this is also, don't forget, that the mother is the one that gives birth to the child. The religion is the one that follows the mother, not the father. So the essence of the child, the essence of the person is really coming from the mother, not from the father. The revelation, whether you're a Kohen, a Levi, a Yisrael, which tribe you come from, you know, that's the father. But the essence of the child is basically coming from the mother. So when you talk about Mishaberach for somebody who's sick, or Yizkor, you talk about, you know, where the essence comes from. So therefore, the Torah says that even though Hashem did kill all the firstborn, of every type, nevertheless, Hashem didn't want to demand only from the person. Now, it has to be the definition of a firstborn. Now, what is the definition of a firstborn? Because sometimes, like you mentioned, sometimes a woman can have a miscarriage, God forbid. So then the question is, what happens to the next child? Is it considered a firstborn or not? So the truth is, in Allah it says, it depends at what stage the miscarriage took place. If there was like no formation of limbs and organs, like let's say liquid came out basically, it's even after 40 days. So then that's not called enough of a child to free the next one. But if there was a formation of organs and limbs, so then the next child does not need a pinyan aben. Sometimes you have to do a suffix pinyan aben, because you don't know, you know. So then you do it without a bracha. But you have to give the kohen the money, you know, to redeem the child. What?
If a woman has a C-section, she doesn't get...
Because of this pasuk, it's a good point, I was going to bring it up soon. The fact that this pasuk says, kopeta rechem, so therefore the Gemara learns out, it's only if it's a natural birth. But a woman that gave birth C-section, even if the next child was born naturally, nevertheless, both don't need a pinyan aben. Why? The first one, because it's not peterach. It's not coming from the womb. The second one's not, because it's not a b'chor. So both don't need.
And if the mother is a
lady
also.
Well, Zachary, I'm going to come into that and the reason for that. 1 second. Okay, so the prayer says it has to be the firstborn of people and animals have to be given to Hashem. Now, he just discusses a little bit of the halach over here. A woman does not have to redeem her firstborn child. Its obligation is only on the father. Why? Because the Gemara says, "Bechar banecha tivde," and the Gemara learns out that whoever has to be redeemed has the obligation of redeeming. That means, technically, let's say, I'll give you an example. What happened if the father is not Jewish? But the kid's still the firstborn of the mother. So you needed to do a pinyan aben. But the father can't do it. He's not obligated because he's a guy. I mean, I'm gonna... And the mother herself is also not obligated. So then, technically, the din is Beis Din could do it. The community could do it. Or, as the halacha says, which this also happens, that if they become an adult, they become a gadol, and they didn't ever had a pinyan aben, so then they have to do it themselves. In others, until their bar mitzvah, obligations on the father or on the Beis Din, the community. But if afterwards they didn't do it, or let's say a person was born not religious, and then they're 30 years old and they realize that they're a firstborn, and their parents never made a pinyan aben, so then it's their obligation to go to the kohen and make a pinyan aben. Yes, obviously you can't use the text that says, you know, my wife gave birth to a firstborn. He can't do that because he's not his wife, it's himself. So he has to come to the kohen and he has to say, I'm a firstborn and I need to be redeemed, and here's the money, and he makes the bracha.
So, Robert, the animals, only the mammals would be the firstborn to Hashem. The birds cannot be for the Hashem.
Firstborn birds are not to Hashem, correct? Only animals, not birds. Yeah. And there's a unique thing only with a donkey. But basically, it's a kosher animals, except the chamerd you have to redeem for a sheep. But basically, it's only in the kosher animals that could be brought as a korban, because a non-kosher animal you can't bring as a korban.
Was the korban eaten by the kohanim?
Abchor necha lekehanim. You say it every day in davening before Haidu, in Ezel Mekayman. The b'chad was eaten by the Kohanim. Why? Because he gave it as a gift to Hashem. Kohanim represents Hashem in the world, and Hashem's representatives. So therefore, the Kohanim were the ones that ate the b'chad, the carbon. Well, first of all, the din opinion behema basically applies only in Eretz Yisrael. But over there, there's a big problem. So, because a b'chor is an inborn kedusha. Like normally when a person wants to bring a korban, right? The person makes the animal holy. The animal's not holy unless if you say it's a korban. When you say it's a carbon, then it becomes holy, correct? But otherwise, it doesn't become, by itself, it's not holy. A bechor is born holy. A bechor is born with kedusha. So, there's a big problem because in Eretz Yisrael today, the din of bechor still applies. So what happens if a farmer, and it happens, as we all know, an animal gives birth. So the din is, really, it's supposed to graze until it gets a mum, until it gets a blemish. In other words, you can't do anything with the animal, you can't eat it, you can't sell it. It's holy, it's kedusha, it's holy. So what do? You have to wait until the animal gets a mum, a blemish. And once it gets a blemish, it's not a kosher carbon anymore, and then you could sell it. Sometimes they rely on a heter that there's a big controversy in halacha. It's like selling the chametz. When an animal is about to give birth, firstborn animal, they'll sell it to a guy. Like you sell chametz, you know. And after, then the animal gives birth when it's in the possession of the guy. And the guy is not obligated in redeeming the firstborn animal. Right? And then they sell it back to the Jew. But the whole controversy in halacha, if that's valid or not, if you're allowed to do that. What they also do in Eretz Yisrael sometimes, which is also not really allowed, you know, have an animal graze until it gets a blemish could take years. Right? So sometimes they'll put it into a very small pen with barbed wire all over the place that the animal should break a foot or get cut or whatever it is. But that's the question, cruelty to animals with all the other issues involved.
They're not allowed to make their own blemish.
No.
If you make the animal blemish, then it's tamei. I mean,
it's not fit to be a carbon.
Right.
But you're not allowed to be, it's called, you're not allowed to be matul mum bekachim. You're not allowed to make a blemish in an animal which is holy.
But when they do it with the cage, and they're like this tight cage.
So, but officially, they're not doing it. No. Just putting it in the cage. That's the whole issue with it.
In the morning, we read that he's a hamor.
You have to redeem it.
You don't redeem with
that shit. One second. This, what you daven is what we're learning now.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
You need to break.
Yeah, we're going to see. This is what we daven is from here. This is this pasuk in Chumash. So a woman is not obligated to tupig in a ben. Another type of bchor, which is not obligated, not in pinyin a ben, as far as humans go, is if the mother is a bas kohen or a bas levi. Okay, if the woman is a bas kohen or a bas levi, because the Torah connects it to the woman, so therefore if she's a kohen or a levi, they also don't need to. That means the son of a kohen doesn't need to be redeemed firstborn, the son of a levi firstborn does not be redeemed, and then it goes even further, that even if the mother is a bas levi or a bas kohen, she also there's no obligation of redeeming the firstborn child. Now, one more detail in this, I mean, there's a full siman in Shulchan Aruch about all this. When is the time of pinyin haben? Let's speak about people now instead of animals. Huh? No. Pinyin haben has to be done on the 31st day. Not on the 30th day. People make the mistake, they think a pinyin haben is supposed to be on the 30th day. It has to be done after the 30th day, meaning on the 31st day. Why? Because according to halacha, until a baby is 30 days old, it's not considered a vibrant, live baby yet. Therefore, in halacha, God forbid, if somebody murders a baby 20 days old, they don't get capital punishment for it. Because we don't know for sure that the baby would be alive for more than 30 days to say that it's a chazakah of being a full-fledged human being.
But I thought after 40 days...
Huh?
But that guy kills on purpose.
Yeah, but he still don't get capital punishment. Because you didn't kill somebody that was for sure a vibrant, live baby. Until 30 days, a child does not have a chazakah of established life yet.
But this is like, what, sort of because of the neshama is not
formed? No, because after 30 days, it's considered a vibrant, living baby.
Too fragile.
if it's the same token, if he attacks a woman who is pregnant and she loses the baby, he's not responsible for the baby.
Right. He's responsible monetarily, but not capital punishment. Right. A goy, yes, a Jew, not. Okay, but I don't go into that. In other words, it's worse for a Jew to, it's worse for a goy to do abortion than a Jew. Not if she had a baby before. That means a woman who was not Jewish had a baby as a non-Jew. Then she was converted and megayed, she becomes a Jew.
She converted, she married Jewish.
Yeah.
And the first...
Yeah, you have to pee in a bench, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. No, I thought you were saying something else. If she was not Jewish and she had a baby, then she became Jewish and had a baby. So that's not considered a new baby. It's not the firstborn. Even though now she's new Jew, you know, a new person. But, right, it's not considered newborn. So they wouldn't need a pinyan abet.
So if, let's say somebody causes a woman a miscarriage, he doesn't get capital punishment?
Correct. So pinyan abet has to be done on the 31st day. Because then already you know that the person is, the baby is officially alive, and now the Kohen has a right to say, give me the money. Huh? If the 31st day is Shabbos, you do it either Saturday night or Sunday. But the Gemara learns out from these psukim that you have to redeem it on the 31st day, that every day that you don't, you're transgressing a positive mitzvah. And the same thing, by the way, is with a bris. Unless if medically, you know, that then there's, under all circumstances, you have to do it. But, I mean, you have to postpone the bris. But if a baby is healthy, and you don't do a bris on the eighth day, and there's no reason why not, every day you don't do a bris, you get another positive mitzvah sinning. And the same thing with Pinyan HaBen. Every day, after the 31st day, that you, an Aveda. Yeah. You're transgressing a positive mitzvah.
Is as bad as the bris milah?
The same positive mitzvah you're transgressing, yeah.
Wow.
What? Sometimes you have to wait a week, but let's say that whatever it is, yeah, you have to do it that day. You can't push it off for convenience.
For how many guests you want to
come? No, you can't do that. No, same with Pinyan HaBen. Pinyan HaBen has to be on the 31st day. Huh? I know, but the same thing with Pinyan HaBen. Pinyan HaBen is less common than a bris. Everybody needs a bris. Pinyan HaBen, they're girls first, or it's a bas levi, a bas koyin, a bas this, a bas that, you know. If a baby was not healthy, unless you couldn't do a bris for 45 days, you do a pinyan HaBen before the bris. The only shaila in halach, which is an interesting shaila, what happens if the pinyan HaBen and the bris fall out the same day? What goes first?
The bris.
So there's two opinions in halacha. But the question is very simple. The 31st day is the time of the bris, of the pinyan HaBen. The bris' time really was before. But today's day, what's today? 31st day is pinyan HaBen day. Some people say, no, the bris is first, because time-wise, bris is supposed to come first. What?
Can
you do both the same day? What do you do first?
Which one you do first?
You do both the same day. Huh? Why? The Braille, the minig is that they do it that way. The bris first. Then you have another thing about not making mitzvahs chavilas. You can't do two mitzvahs together because it looks like a burden. So you make a break. In halach it says you could do it at night, but poskim being down is better not to do it at night.
So if you can do it at night, then the bris goes first.
Oh yeah, that's for sure. But I'm saying if it's both the same day and you didn't do it the night before, so then
right. If someone, for every day a person doesn't give a bris, or a person doesn't give a bris, he gets karis, right?
No, not every day you don't get 30 times karis.
No, I'm saying, but he gets karis.
Yeah. Pinyan HaBen does not get karis.
What's the punishment if he doesn't do Pinyan HaBen?
It's just a positive mitzvah. There's no punishment for
so
it.
If the mother, say the father died or whatever, the mother doesn't have to, she has to do the Pinyan HaBen also, right?
A mother doesn't have an obligation to do a bris either. Let's say there's no father. Let's say there's no father, or the father's a guy, yeah? So, does the mother have an obligation to do the bris? No, the bris obligation becomes on Beis Din. If the kid became bar mitzvah and never had a bris, then it's his obligation to do a bris. But a mother is not obligated to do a bris. It's not her responsibility. A woman is technically allowed to do a bris, b'di'evit. But that doesn't mean she has an obligation, that she is obligated to do the bris on her son. What?
A man is obligated to do bris on himself.
Not to do it.
No, no, physical. No, I mean the.
Avraham Avinu did it on himself.
No, I'm not thinking of the physical.
Yeah.
He goes to a mohel and asks him to do it.
He has an obligation to do it.
If the parents, they don't do it.
Yeah. But it's interesting. The true obligation of doing the bris is on the father. And therefore, if you ever go to a bris, and this is where Pinyan HaBen is different than a bris. Technically, the obligation of the bris, the father has to do the bris. He has to cut.
Right.
But thank God, not everybody's going to start cutting. I mean, be a big problem. So, the father must make the moyel a shliach to do it. Yeah. And therefore, if you ever leave by a bris, when he hands him the knife and everything, the moyel says, "Say, give me the knife and say, I'm appointing you the shliach to do the bris on my son." And therefore, according to many opinions, if the father knows how to do it, he has to do it. He can't have somebody else do it. Because the mitzvah is on him.
Right.
A guy that doesn't know how to do it, you can't expect him to do it. Right. So he makes the moyel a shliach.
What happens if there's no moyel?
You bring in a moyel.
No,
or what they do sometimes, in Farad Islands and things like that, when there's a few brisin to be done, they fly in a moyel, because the people are not that religious, they fly in a moyel who does a bunch of bris and later dates, but it's better than not doing it. 1 second. Get back to the psukim here. So, just one more detail in the obligation. The Torah says, how much do you have to give the firstborn, for the firstborn to redeem it, is chamesh sloim, 5 sloim, which of silver, or the equivalent of money of 5 sloim. In today's terms, it's like 101 grams of silver. Whatever the value of 101 grams of silver is, that's how much the redemption of the firstborn is. Now, why does the Torah, the Ramban writes, why does the Torah say that this is the amount that you have to give for Pinyan HaBen? Because this is to rectify what they sold Yosef for Esrim Dinrim. Each sela is 4 dinars. So when they sold Yosef for Esrim Kesef, which was 20 dinars, it was really 5 sloim. And Yosef, the Bchor, was supposed to be the Bchor, you know, the whole thing. So to rectify what the brothers did by selling Yosef for 5 sloim, so the Torah says you have to give 5 sloim. But you can use equivalent. Let's say, for argument's sake, 101 grams of silver, let's say, is worth $50. So you can give the kohen an object worth $50. You can give him books worth $50. You can't give him land, you can't give him, but basically give him tangible item worth the value of silver. Money is the equivalent of money, yeah. You have to give something worth 101 grams of silver. Usually 5, sometimes they make 6. He could, he doesn't have to. It's not a game. You know, you give him the money, it's his money. He wants to give him back. Usually what happens is, kohenim that are do this often enough, kohenim usually get 5 or 6 silver dollars. And as you saw, they have coins, which are designated exactly for. Okay, so not everybody has these coins. So a lot of times a kohen has them. You know, he sells them to you. Sometimes for the value, sometimes for less, whatever. But he sells them to the father. The father buys him, the coins become his, and he gives them back to the kohen. Now the kohen got his coins back. But it's real. I mean, you have to give him that amount of money. The kohen can't come along and say, I'm meichel the money. You know, don't give it. You have to give him the money. Any coin, a kosher coin, I mean, yeah. Some people like to have a Shemir Shabbos, some people, like, you know, but, it's better if it's Shemir Shabbos, because then, you know.
But the, what is the pasuk that, is it the actual pasuk that says that they sold him? Is that what the halacha is based on?
Yeah. Okay. So the whole, basically, a whole procedure, the father brings the baby to the kohen, the kohen says to the father, what do you want more? Do you want, the father says, father brings the firstborn to the kohen, the father says to the kohen, it's in the Siddurim. Basically, what he's saying to the kohen is, my wife gave birth to this boy and the Torah commands me to redeem it, so here's the baby. So the father, the kohen says to the father, what do you want more? The baby or the five sloim? Sometimes the father has to think for a minute. Then finally the father says, hopefully, the father says, by the way, it says in Shulchan Aruch, what happens if the father says to the kohen, you know what? Keep the kid. No, really, what happens? Yeah. Keep the kid. Doesn't work. He can't say keep the kid. The mitzvah, you have to redeem him, not, okay.
Levim
are not obligated, or if the mother's a Levi, or a kohen not. Right.
So
well, the Torah really says the reason is because the firstborns were supposed to get killed in Mitzrayim, and Hashem didn't. There is also a thing that the kohen, before the Egel, the firstborns worked in the Mishkan. Right. Then after the Egel, they lost it because they worshipped the Egel, and then the kohenim and Levim got it. Okay, let's go further. V'yemer me pasuk beis. V'yemer meisha, Shemesha Rabbeinu said to the Jews, Zachar Sayyim Azeh, you should remember this day, Ashi Yitzasim Mitzrayim Mesavodim, that you went out of the Mitzrayim from the house of slavery. Why? Ki b'chezikad, because of a strong hand, Heitzi Hashem Eschem Mizeh, Hashem took you out of here, and therefore, V'lo Yeyocho Chametz, you shouldn't eat Chametz. So basically Hashem is saying that you have to remember Yitzias Mitzrayim every day. This is the mitzvah. Oh, there's a pasuk also later on, but Rashi says over here, there's an obligation to remember Yitzias Mitzrayim every day of the year. Okay? By the way, this parsha of Chumash, until the end of the parsha, which is really two paragraphs in the Chumash, are two of the four parshas we have in the Tefillin. In the Tefillin we have Shema Yisrael and Vahoyim Shemaya, like in a mezuzah. And in Tefillin, you have these two, Kaddish Li Kol B'chor, and later on there's a part called V'hoyah Kiviyacha, in Pasik Yud Aleph, which is a new paragraph in the Torah. These are, this also, from here until the end of Parshas Bay, are two of the four Parshas which we have inside the Tefillin. And the reason we have them inside the Tefillin, because they talk about Tefillin, as we'll soon learn. Okay, so the Pasik continues, and it says you have to remember this day. And then he says, Hayem atem yeitzim b'chodesh aviv. Today you are going out in the month, in the summer, in the spring month. So the question is, the Jews know when they left Egypt. I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu was telling it to this, to them on the 15th of Nisan. Hayem atem yeitzim. He says, today you're going out. So obviously Moshe Rabbeinu is speaking to the Jews as they're going out of Egypt. So the question is, they don't know when they're going out. What is it, b'chodesh aviv? So, Rashi comments in the Medrash, what the Medrash is basically saying to the Jews, Hashem was very kind to you. Hashem could have taken you out in the winter, when it's freezing cold. He could have taken you out in the summer, when it's boiling hot. When did Hashem take you out? Springtime. It's beautiful weather, not too hot, not too cold. So Hashem did this as a favor. Just Hashem said, remember, you know, I did it in a way that's very beneficial for you. The Mepharshim explain, why is this called Chodesh Aviv? Why is it called Chodesh Aviv? So he says, because Aviv comes spring. Aviv is spring. But what does it mean over here? Aviv is two words. Av Yud Beis. Is the father of all 12 months. B'chaydish ha'aviv, because Nisan is the Av of Yud Beis Chaydish. So therefore it's called Aviv, not only spring, but it's Taka the Rishon Hulacham L'chatshi Hashanah, the first of the 12 months. So that's why Hashem took him out in the month of the spring, that people should remember what the kindness that Hashem did. It was when Hashem will bring you to the land of Canaan, Chiti, Amedi, Chivi, Vuvusi. Basically means the seven nations. Ashenishba Lavisacha Losislach that he swore to your forefathers to give you. Eretz Zavas Cholov Devash, land flowing with milk and honey. No relation to the restaurant, by the way. Vavadatas Aveda Azais, you should do this Aveda. B'chedesh Hazen this month. So, the question again over here is, why is he mentioning five out of the seven? We know there were seven nations in Canaan, right? So, from the seven nations, the Torah is only mentioning Canaani, Chiti, Amedi, Chivi, and Yevusi. So why is he leaving out, what? Girgashi is leaving, huh? What? Prizin Girgashi is leaving out. So he says, why? Because some of us write, because their land wasn't flowing with milk and honey. In other words, the five kings were the land of milk and honey. The other two wasn't such great land flowing in milk and honey. But, other people say because those two nations ran away by themselves, the Jews didn't even have to conquer them, they just ran away. But basically, the Mefarshim say something else. Really, all the nations are part of Canaan. That's why it's called Eretz Canaan. So even though they really had five kings, or seven kings, or as Rashi somewhere else says, 31 kings, because there are subdivisions, nevertheless, the whole land is called the land of Canaan.
Question.
Yep. It must allude to something. What exactly, I can't tell you offhand, I don't know.
Rashi says
it's goat milk. It's not milk, cow milk. It's not cow milk, it's goat milk.
Oh. And
Dvashel Tmarim, and there was such an abundance of dates that they actually were giving out a lot of honey. There must be. I don't know now offhand. If I remember for next week, I'll look into it and I'll try to get you an answer.
It's your homework.
Thank you. Who's going to mark it? Okay.
Don't put him on the spot. He may give us homework.
Yeah.
So throughout the Chumash, is Eretz Israel called Eretz Israel or Eretz Canaan?
It's not called anywhere Eretz Israel and Chumash. So it's called Eretz Canaan. Because until the Jews got there, it was the land of Canaan.
And even after they got there, other than to change the name to Israel.
I don't know, in Tanakh, you have to have Tanakh experts. But in Chumash, it doesn't call anyway Eretz Yisrael, because it wasn't. It was the land of Canaan. Until after Moshe Rabbeinu passed away, Yeshua took over. It's not called Eretz Yaakov.
No,
I'm saying it's not.
It became Israel, so maybe that's why we call it Israel.
But we're also called Bnei Yisrael. You know, we're called Bnei Yisrael usually. I mean, Yisrael is the name of greatness. I mean, you're comparing Yisrael and Yaakov, Yisrael is the greater name. Yisrael also, and one of the reasons, perhaps, why it's called, because here the Pasuk is also saying the expression that I swore to your forefathers. Ashenishba lavisecha, that I swore to your forefathers. And we've learned in the past, we mentioned that the word Yisrael, Yud, Shin, Reish, Aleph, Lamed, is all the patriarchs and matriarchs. Right? Yud is Yaakov and Yitzchak, or Yitzchak and Yaakov. Shin is Sarah. Resh is Rachel and Rivka, or Rivka and Rachel. Aleph is Avraham. And Lamed is Leah. So you have Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. And because the land was sworn to our forefathers, the Avos and Emores, that could be another reason why it's called Eretz Yisrael, in addition to the fact that the Bnei Yisrael called Bnei Yisrael. Because that's the Shem Amayla, that's the name of greatness that the Jews had, not the name of Yaakov. Okay, so now the pasuk continues. And it says, Vahoyo, what?
Basically, Israel stands for Yaakov, Sarah, Rachel,
Yitzchak, and Yaakov.
Yeah. They don't follow any pattern.
There's no pattern. Because it has other meanings also. It's Sarkel, Yoshekel, you know. Because Yaakov got the name Yisrael when he fought with the Malach. So he fought Sarkel, he fought with the officer Kisarisim and Lakim. You know, but there are other reasons also. The Mefarshim just say that the name Yisrael has within it all the Avos and Emores. That's basically it. Okay, so now he says, V'gadat Levincha. This is a very important pasuk because this is the pasuk that the whole mitzvah of Pesach is really based on, which is the mitzvah V'gadat Levincha, is a mitzvah by Yemahu Leimer. It's a mitzvah to tell your children, that this is what Hashem did to me when I went out of Mitzrayim. So number one, this is a positive mitzvah, like one of the mitzvahs of the Torah, of Igadat to Levincha, that the night of the Seder, meaning the night of Pesach, there's a mitzvah to verbally say it. Igadat to means you have to say it, you can't think it.
Yeah.
You have to actually verbally say it. And that's how the Mefarshim, one of the things that Rebbe brings on in the Haggadah, the Mefarshim ask, if there's a mitzvah to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim every day, so what's special the night of Pesach? It's every day you have the mitzvah. Why is Pesach different than the rest of the year? And there's many different answers. One of the answers is, a whole year, the Torah says, remember. Remember could be even in your mind. Pesach, there's a mitzvah, V'gadat Levincha, that you have to say it. It's not enough to remember it. You actually have to say it. 1 second. No, not that the cops are all around Wall Street. They're open at night, too. What?
So, Rabbi, the mitzvah is Vigat Levincha, but also, before we had Zachor, remember that you came out of Egypt. So how come the mitzvah is fulfilled by saying the Shema? We pronounce the words that you...
Well, that's one of the... It doesn't say you don't have to say it. I mean,
it's not... It's only Zachor. How come it's not just... How come we can't just think it?
Because it's better if you could say it, that's for sure. But according to many opinions, you get the mitzvah of remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim, even remembering. Some posts can write even a small mention of it. Just Yetzias Mitzrayim, Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim, you did the mitzvah. Pesach, there's a mitzvah to elaborate on it, and so on and so forth. And therefore, Halacha says, what happens if there's no kids? How do you fulfill the mitzvah you got it to Levincha? By telling it to your wife. What happens if you live alone? How you mekayim the mitzvah v'gadat to Levincha? By talking to yourself. Explaining
loud.
It. Yeah, well, it depends how good your hearing is.
If the neighbors can hear.
No, but that's the halacha. If not, the person has to do it with himself. Okay, but the mitzvah is v'gadat to Levincha b'yur merhu leimer. And therefore, the God it also says, I would think yachom erash chaydish, that you could do it from Rosh Chodesh. So it says, no, which refers to the night of Pesach. Now, okay, I'm not going into the whole thing with the Haggadah. We're not going to learn the Haggadah now, because whatever. Too late. This is a question. We're not going to go through the whole Haggadah now. But this pasuk is basically used for the Sheni Day Elishal. It's used for the Rasha. Yeah, this pasuk is used for a few of the kids. But
I have a question here. In the beginning, when we start, it says that you have to sanctify your firstborn to me, and then it talks all about the matzah and the pesach. What is the relationship of going all the way from the pesach to the firstborn?
Huh? What do you mean? Because of Vavatikopera? Well,
thank you for your firstborn.
Yeah.
And so forth.
Right.
Then it goes on. You have to remember that you came from Egypt and you have to eat matzah. You should not be in your position and so forth. What is two?
Well, really, it's three things coming together, because soon we're going to come to tefillin.
Right.
So there's basically in the same paragraph you have three different mitzvahs that seemingly have no connection. Firstborn, Yetzias Mitzrayim, and tefillin. Right? So the Mefarshim explain both because Hashem took the Jews out of Egypt after he killed the firstborn.
Right.
And the reason that Pinyan Aban is because God killed the firstborn, and which eventually made Pari throw the Jews out of Egypt. And tefillin is also, again, the same concept of binding your mind and heart to God for all the miracles that Hashem did to us. So the Mefarshim explained there is a connection. In that he writes, these three topics are related. If you see at the bottom, Kukuja said it consists of two passages, and he goes into the whole thing over here. There was the sanctity of firstborn, and then there's Esav, meaning Yaakov became Yaakov, even though Esav was the firstborn. So the Torah is connecting all three concepts, Yetzias Mitzrayim and the firstborn, Yetzias Mitzrayim, you know, they're all interconnected. Yetzias was supposed to be the firstborn technically, but Reuven was. Yetzias was supposed to be the firstborn, but Yaakov became the firstborn. This is all connected to Yetzias Mitzrayim, why the Jews ended up in Egypt and going out of Egypt. So they're all connected, and that's why, by the way, as we know, that these are the parshas mentioned in the Tefillin.
Because it goes back on verse 11 again and becomes talk about firstborn.
Yes. It goes through all three things right. Again. We'll see.
Technically, Yosef was firstborn to his mother.
To his mother. Yeah, I mean, Yaakov would have to do a pinyan of Ben and Reuven and Yosef and whoever got Yisachar, whatever, whoever the first four pinyan of Ben he had to do. Question is, how to find a Kohen in those days? Malki Tzedek, or Shame, or whatever. By the way, just to make the women feel good, the Beinu Bechai explains. Listen, when I do it, chaperein, because it doesn't happen often. He says, the Beinu Bechai asked the question we asked before, he brings it down over here. Although the plague of the firstborn struck even the firstborn of both men and women, the commandment of sanctification is only firstborn of the woman, not of the man. He explains why. This is to symbolize that Hashem's love for Israel is as great as a mother's love for her baby, a love that far surpasses that of the father. So first, he also brings down that we said before the Rashba's answer, because the mother is certain that you know for sure where the baby comes from. But the Rabbeinu Bechai explains that because Hashem wants to show us that he loves the Jews like a mother loves her baby, which is more than the father. Right?
I don't know
anymore. You don't know anymore. Okay.
I see very loving fathers too.
Yeah, but some of them are men that act like women. So they're really women.
It's
true. The neshama got mixed up. You know, a lady's neshama ended up in a man, and it happens sometimes. Yeah. Okay.
Finally.
Oh. Okay, so now the pasuk continues. And it says, one minute. I skipped two psukim. I didn't realize nobody else did either. I went to Vigadit to Levincha, but there's two psukim before. Shiva Siyam Techo Matzis.
That we eat matzo for 7 days.
Huh?
We didn't say that part.
Yeah, right. Right. And also the Aveda of, when it says Bachede Shazeh, Vavadet Aveda Zeis Bachede Shazeh, means the whole month is connected to Pesach. But then the Pasuk says as follows, Shiva Siyam Techo Matzis. This Pasuk is very important because it's a contradiction to an earlier Pasuk. Or later pasuk. Here the pasuk says shivas yam techol matzis. Before we learned it says 6 days eat matzis. Remember, so we learned over there that one pasuk says six, one pasuk says seven. To teach us that the seventh is only optional, And if the seventh is optional, all 6 days are optional. Right. So the only day which is mandatory is the first night of Pesach. Because the Torah says over here, 7 days eat matzahs. There's no mitzvah in the Torah to eat matzahs 7 days. Because only the first night we know is obligated to eat matzah. The what? There's no mitzvah to eat matzah 7 days. You're not allowed to eat chametz, but you don't have to eat matzah every day.
You can eat
potatoes with meat. Yeah, but the Torah says shivas yom techol matzahs. That you have to eat matzah 7 days. So Rashi asked the question before, the one pasuk says 6 days eat matzah. It's from the Gemara. 6 days eat matzah. Another pasuk says 7 days eat matzah. So Gemara says, Dava shayu b'chlol. The yotzman aklal lalamed, lo lalamed alatmi yotza, lalamed al aklal kulo yotza. Which means, the fact that the Torah says 6 days and then 7 days teaches us that the seventh day is really optional. But then the Gemara says, not only is the seventh day optional, all 6 days are optional. So the Gemara says, how do I know there's a mitzvah to eat the night of Pesach? Because it says, Ba'erev Teich L'Matzis. There's another puzzle that says, in the evening you have to eat matzah. But some poskim learn, and we mentioned it then also, some poskim learn that even though there's no mitzvah to eat matzah 7 days, when you do, you get a mitzvah. You know, you can't make a bracha, like the first night you make a bracha, Shekashem Mitzvah, Salachilas Matzah. You can't make a bracha lachilas matzah the 7 days because there's no mitzvah to eat matzah 7 days. But if you do, you get a mitzvah.
Did you say
mitzvah to
wash? Well, how are you going to eat matzah without washing?
First night of Pesach is on Wednesday.
No. The first night could be Friday night also, by the way. The first night could be Friday night, no?
Then, you have to eat matzah twice.
Why? There's nothing to do with matzah, it has to do with Shabbos. We're talking about the midst of eating matzah. What? One sec, what?
How come matzah is spelled without a vav?
Huh?
Matzah is spelled without a vav.
Chassidus explains that it refers to the matzah before chatzos, which doesn't have the hamshacha, therefore it's chaser. What?
Matzah eating during the year is mezuzot or hamotzah?
It depends how Sephardic you are and how Jewish you are.
Sephardic.
Some of them make
mezuzot.
Sephardic
and Jewish at the same time.
You can't. It's impossible. That's what I said. Depends if you're Sephardic or Jewish. Now, Ashkenazic Jews all make hametzia matzah a whole year. Some Sephardic people make, according to their post, can make mezainas and matzah during the year, except in Pesach. Huh? There's bench? I mean, the way we all do, you have to wash and make a mezainas and bench. But if you're not Jewish, you're Sephardic, then you have to... Yeah, then you make mezainas.
I'm barely Jewish, yet I'm not Sephardic.
Okay.
We say something, anything, every time that you have flour with water, it becomes a hamosi.
Yeah, but sometimes when it's a very thin thing, some people say it's a cracker, then it's... But we hold flour and water baked is always hamotzi.
When it's thin?
No, there are certain poskim, right, because it's very thin, that's...
The same thing with the pizza, no?
Right?
No.
If it's flour and water, like in L.A., it's hamotzi. According to Ashkenazic poskim, flour and water, no matter what it is a motzi.
Yeah, like tortillas, flour, tortillas.
It depends if it's flour and water.
But that's not flour, that's a corn.
No, flour, tortillas.
It depends what the majority of liquid is. If the majority of liquid is water, it's a motzi. The majority of liquid is juice, huh? Flour and water is a motzi. So crackers made with flour and water, according to Ashkenazic ruling, is as a motzi.
But I heard sometimes also pizza
is
motzi.
We hold pizzas are motzi. It's here in LA, it's made with flour and water. In New York, they have mezainis pizza, which is made flour and juice. And even then, you really have to wash it. But let's not discuss that one. But if it's flour and water, you have to wash it.